Welcome to the Leading Real Change podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jacqueline Kerr, an expert in workplace culture change. From my unique background in behavior science, public health, and community advocacy, I help corporate leaders with evidence-based individual, team, and organizational change to create thriving workplace cultures for all. In the Leading Real Change podcast, I interview dedicated and passionate change makers about their careers, how they lead change, and what leaders can do today to make a difference, to build healthy, inclusive workplace cultures for all. I'm excited to share these examples of real workplace change with you. You'll learn about effective strategies that are working and how to overcome real barriers to change that challenge us every day. I hope you'll feel inspired and more confident to keep leading change in your workplace. Please share this podcast with other HR, DEI, or ERG leaders who you know are working hard but are struggling to have an impact and need more support to effectively create a thriving workplace culture for all today.
My name is Melissa Cooper. I am the Chief Operating Officer at Globalization Partners and my family. So I have a husband and I have two young children, 8 and 6.
Oh, exciting. Thank you so much for that. And so is your 6-year-old in school already or going to be in school?
In school, in kindergarten, actually. So this is her first year. Yes, which is very exciting. And she's very proud of herself for being at the big kid school with her brother.
Okay, thank you so much for those details and for coming to speak with us today. So can you start by telling us a bit about your career journey and how motherhood has played a role in that?
Yeah, absolutely. Going way back, I started my career actually in the accounting fields. I graduated with an accounting degree and thought that would be my life journey and my career journey would be ultimately, my goal was to be a CFO at some point, but in actually practicing in the field, I realized that was not the case or going to be the case. While I saw the value in accounting, I definitely didn't see a career. I was not exactly getting the job satisfaction out of the roles that I was looking for and didn't feel that I was making enough of an impact on a day-to-day basis. So I actually moved out to San Diego from Massachusetts in 2007. And this was after jumping from role to role with different accounting roles, basically probably trying to find my place. And when I moved out to San Diego, I once again got a job with a firm where I was working as a technical and transaction accounting analyst, supporting M&A. Type transactions. And wow, was that not for me? I was just bored to tears, quite frankly. And I went back to the recruiter that I had worked with originally when I first moved to San Diego. And this was within 3 months of starting the role. And I said to him, love living in San Diego. I'd really like to stay here and make it work. But I really need to find a role that I'm excited by. I am a worker. I love to work. That's just who I am. It's the type of family I come from. And so I really was looking for something where I felt challenged and that job satisfaction I was looking for. Fast forward to getting a job description of a role from this recruiter that essentially combined my accounting expertise and experience in education with an account management type roles. And it was for a company that was helping other US-based companies set up entities around the globe and support those entities with the back office requirements to actually run their entity globally. And this company was looking again for someone that had accounting experience, but was really like an account manager. So I met with a woman who interviewed me for that role. And ultimately, she hired me. And to this day, she is now the CEO of the current company that I'm at, Nicole Sahin. She will still tell you that she doesn't know if she hired me because I was actually qualified for the role or she actually just liked me as a person. But either way, I'm so grateful that she ultimately took a leap of faith and hired me for this role at what was the company was called High Street Partners. I was one of the early team members or employees at this company. I think I was employee number 16. So it was a very small company at the time. And I was there for close to 7 years, and I had several different roles within the company. But what I came to realize, Jacqueline, is that I loved account management. I loved working with customers and really helping them solve problems. And I also loved international business. I loved meeting and speaking with all these people around the globe that came from different backgrounds and cultures. And I was just fascinated by it. So I think I really came to find my place in the work world. So again, I stayed there for about almost 7 years. And in that time, Nicole Sahin had left High Street and had talked about her vision for a company that enabled any company around the globe to be able to hire employees globally, but without having to actually set up their own entity, which ultimately is now what we know as the employer of record industry. So she essentially founded the industry in 2012. And in 2014, she had approached me and offered a role at GP as essentially the first full-time employee alongside her as the founder. So I joined Nicole in April 2014. I was engaged at the time. And so I joined in April. I got married in October, and I came back from my honeymoon and I found out that I was pregnant. So I was only at the company for about 6 months. And this was a very small company, obviously, but a growing company, and she needed me. But why it's relevant and how motherhood has played a role in my career journey is that I couldn't have asked for a more supportive manager boss. She was so thrilled that I was going to become a mother. She had known that it was something that I had wanted to do since I had met her back in 2007. And despite the fact that we were a really small company, she enabled me to have the typical 3 months of leave. And I came back essentially to a different role because the company continued to hire people and continued to grow while I was on leave. But I was able to come back to an elevated role within the company. And this happened again in 2017 when I had my daughter as well, where essentially, it enabled me to offload the work that I was responsible for and the role that I was responsible for. And while I was on maternity leave, when I came back to a more senior level role. So I'm grateful to Nicole and I'm grateful to the company for allowing me, not feeling like this was a negative, but quite frankly, it ended up being a positive for both the company and myself. It allowed us to scale and it allowed me to come into different roles when I came back to GP from both maternity leaves.
Yeah, that's such a fascinating story, Melissa, and one that I just have never heard before. I've been interviewing so many mums over the last 2 years, and it's usually the opposite, that they've come back to many more responsibilities and no help. And in fact, the role has changed and literally on the point of burnout returning from their maternity leave and without necessarily the 3 months that you were given. So I'm really delighted to hear this story. And I think it's such an important one because that's what we're going to dig into today is what were the conditions that made that happen and what were the values? How do we have employees who have that experience? Because that's definitely what we want. And I think also to, and we'll talk about this throughout the interview too, is the fact that you are helping other organizations around the world manage these employment issues. And yet in the US, we have some of the worst maternity leave policies. I'm so glad to have this opportunity to talk to you because I think that, again, is such a fascinating transformation for companies to think about, which is, oh, our normal practice here in the US is not acceptable in the rest of the world.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I have to say, we have, at least at the executive level team, about a 50-50 diversity ratio. But quite frankly, it's just about that around the globe. And what I find with working mothers is that they're actually some of the hardest working people you'll ever come across. It also requires you as a mom, and now that I've been through it, time management, project management, you have skills that frankly, you do it almost sometimes for survival because you're getting pulled in multiple different directions because you're a mom at home and you're needed at home, right? But then you've got your work life and you're needed by your team or you're needed by your colleagues. So it requires you to really figure out what that balance is to make sure that you're meeting the needs of a lot of different people that require your time, your energy, your support. So it's definitely not easy. But what I find is I'm astounded by the females in our company, the working mothers that are able to get through and just accomplish so much in their day-to-day work life, but yet be incredible moms at the same time. And don't get me wrong, it is not easy, but I just think we are forced to hone our skills from a time management perspective, especially, but also do what's necessary, do what's most important and urgent, and really be protective of your time. And really work on what makes the most sense, particularly on your job, because you have a family life that you have to tend to as well. And that's just as critical, if not more critical, of course.
And I agree that ability to focus because you have limited time in which to do it. But also, I think, as you alluded to in your career journey, is purpose too. And one of my guests had described that he actually started a podcast while he was working in a job and realized he got so much purpose from that podcast. He really wanted to spend more time doing that. So therefore, he had to reduce his time and what he was doing at work. And he didn't become less productive. He became more productive because he became focused and because the purpose was driving him. So I know many moms who feel the same. If I'm going to be spending time away from my family, one, I want it to be impactful and meaningful. And two, I'm going to focus on the most important, impactful things. And I think that's where we struggle in our always on, always available culture that still pervades work, which is that culture assumes you have endless time and you are always available. Yet there are many groups of people who have constraints on our time. So I feel like that when we only reward time-based merit and not actually focus on the impact or the performance, then yeah, we have definitely seen from the data that we're disadvantaging women and particularly mums in the workplace.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We at GP pride ourselves on employee choice. And ultimately, just like you said, it shouldn't be on how many hours you're putting in, because ultimately that just leads to burnout. It should be on what are you producing? And frankly, if you can produce something in 10 hours versus 40, good for you. And if it's just as good as what we're expecting for someone that works 40 hours, then why is that a bad thing? I think we should encourage that more, right? It's what's the outcome of what people are working on, not how much time people are actually spending on it and expecting them to be at their desks 9 to 5. It's just not reality any longer.
So let's talk about that then. We're going to talk about the values that drive your organization and the policies and some of the initiatives that you've been doing. But tell me, where do you think it starts? Imagining somebody else thinking, okay, how do I get started with these more diversity-friendly workplace practices and policies? So tell me where you think it starts and what values drive your organization.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it absolutely starts with the leader, right? And what that leader believes in. But for us, our founder, Nicole, she founded this company on what she calls the triple bottom line philosophy, which essentially means treat your employees well, they will treat your customers well, and ultimately that ends up being a positive for your shareholders. That philosophy has lived on. It lives on today. And that's something that she founded the business on back in 2012, and it still remains today. And so all of our values are built off of that. And our employees feel valued. And ultimately, with that, our customers are extremely happy. If you look at our reviews, customers feel valued because they're being supported by employees that feel supported. Then ultimately, it's a positive impact on our bottom line. And happy shareholders. When it comes to values at the leadership level, kind of worked on and have honed over time, what are our most important values as a company? And it's changed, I would say, even since 2020 with COVID and becoming a remote first company, and what is most important to us as a company. But overall, our values drive what we're looking to accomplish as a company. So one of our values is customers are our compass. So we believe that customers are at the center of everything that we do. And we expect everyone in the company, not just those team members that are customer facing, but everybody to be accountable to a world-class customer experience and making sure that whatever we do ultimately is for the benefit of providing a great experience to our customers and the professionals that we hire on their behalf. So it's that accountability. It's the responsiveness, again, not only to our customers, but to our internal. We treat our colleagues internally as customers as well. We believe in big thinking. We encourage inventive ideas and challenging the norm of how things work. And we encourage curiosity. We like to say here that whatever got us here doesn't necessarily get us there. So constantly looking at things critically. And I think as a growing organization, that's so critical because in order to scale a business, just because you did something one way for, quite frankly, could be years, doesn't necessarily mean that's going to lead to success as the company grows and as we move to the future. So we encourage people to look at things differently and to challenge the norm.
That's great. I really like just that simple way of putting it. It absolutely communicates curiosity and not assuming that the past is the best predictor of the future. So it opens people to go, what could be different?
Yeah, exactly. And just like you said it before about the person who really loved what he was doing with podcasts, right? So it's like, we're encouraging people to think critically about everything. I love that he was driven by that purpose of, oh, I really love doing podcasts. So it's like encouraging people to bring their own ideas and their own kind of feelings to or thoughts and ideas to how we can shape this organization. And I think that ties into your own personal purpose and bringing that job satisfaction that I keep talking about to each employee that comes to work every day. You want them to feel challenged. You want them to feel encouraged to think outside the box. And it can lead to all different things like this person who now has his own podcast, which I love that story.
So tell me some of the policies that your organization has developed to better support employees.
Yeah, like I said, we are a remote first company, which essentially means that all of our employees work from home. And we do have what we call collaboration hubs. And essentially, those are offices in specific jurisdictions where we have a significant number of employees locally that allow them to go into those hubs, not on a day-to-day basis. We actually discourage people going to one of our collaboration hubs and sitting on Zoom all day because that kind of defeats the purpose of collaboration. But we recognize that employees do still have value in getting together to whiteboard and brainstorm and have team meetings. So those collaboration hubs are for that purpose. And just to have that human connection, I recognize, and I do it for my own team. We actually just have one this week where we had to get together to talk about an evolution and transformation that we're undergoing within our department as we speak. Doing that over hours on Zoom is incredibly challenging, and you just don't get as much out of it, I would say, than you do getting in person. So we do, even as a remote first company, we do have a policy that people can take advantage of these collaboration hubs. We also have implemented in the last year or so, particularly with remote first challenges, because not all things are perfect when it comes to working remotely. What we found is that, and a lot of companies have, is that remote work actually leads to longer hours for people. There's no real stop at the end of the day and no commute, right? So because of that, we've seen people even get burnt out from working remotely. So we've encouraged and implemented policies that enable folks and managers to really understand when employees are working longer than 60 plus hours to alert those managers to say, heads up, you should probably speak to your employee because we're seeing that these employees are working over 60 hours per week, which is excessive and something's going on, right? So we need to address this. We don't want them to burn out. We also have implemented and encourage employees to block at least 10 hours of time in their calendars per week so that they can use that time to really think and work on initiatives rather than sitting on Zoom meetings all day long. Because I think that's one of the challenges of working remotely is that you can't just turn over and speak to your colleague who may be sitting next to you or you may run into in the lunchroom. It requires you to be purposeful about reaching out. And that often leads to holding meetings. And quite frankly, those meetings are likely longer than they need to be. It seems that people have gotten comfortable with just a 30-minute meeting, but it doesn't always have to be 30 minutes. So we've also implemented a default to 25 or 50-minute meetings. And the purpose of that is to give people at least 5 minutes or 10 minutes to recharge, to go grab something to eat, whatever it may be, so that they're not jumping from meeting to meeting with no break in between. And flexible time off is another policy that we've recently implemented, enabling employees to really feel empowered about the time that they take off. So we don't allot a specific number of vacation hours for people to take. We allow them to basically have flexibility to take time off for whatever activity it may be, whether that's actually vacation or a hobby that they may have. Like you were saying earlier, you're moving your house. There are people that obviously people move houses all the time. So if you need time off to move, that type of thing. We also have what we call conscious connections. So we give an allotted money value to every employee around the globe to enable them to actually either meet in person or virtually and use that money to grab lunch with a colleague or dinner, whatever it may be. And that's done on a quarterly basis, again, to really create that and enable and empower folks to feel connected to their colleagues, which can be challenging when you're working remote.
These are some fantastic examples. I'll give you a break from having to go through them and talk a little because it's hard to keep up with all of them. I love that your hubs are local as well. And I think that's so important. So often there's this pressure to be at a headquarters that isn't necessarily where people are living. And even I've seen companies who are saying, oh, we'll help you move near a headquarters, and then not realizing what message that actually conveys, which is we're rewarding people to be at headquarters. So it's so great that you're saying that we're creating hubs where the people are. I love again that you're making a budget for these connections and also thinking about the meetings. Because again, so many mums are working flexibly, but that means they've got meetings at 7 a.m. as well. And so it's just even this last week, one of my mums couldn't get her son to school to be there early for a field trip because she had a 7 a.m. meeting. And so that flexibility isn't advantageous if it has no limits at all in when are your collaborative hours or how you make decisions about what you meet about.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And hearing that story, it's heartbreaking as a mom. So for listeners, I would encourage people to set those boundaries and feel empowered. I've had to do that myself, frankly, Jacqueline, where it was getting to the point where it was impacting my home life. And I had to put from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. a block on my calendar Monday through Friday that says I am out of office because that is a time in the morning that I have to get my children ready and I have to get them to school. And that's just a non-negotiable, right? So I think moms and dads should feel empowered to do that and really set the boundaries and know that, again, we have work lives and then we have home lives and they're just as important. And making sure that you, again, I can't stress enough, setting those boundaries is so critical because if you don't, no one's going to, and that time will just be taken advantage of.
Exactly. And even if it is in setting that boundary, you start to have that conversation why it's a problem. But if we don't even try to set the boundary, then it being a problem is never known. I think this is something I definitely had to learn, even just between my husband and I. If I wasn't voicing the problems I had, then how could he possibly know what I was going through? And a couple of other notes I have here are circles of care and golden hours. Have you mentioned those yet?
No, I've not. So our circles of care. So yeah, that is something that we implemented because there are tough things that happen in the world every day. And we really need to lean on one another when we're faced with unfortunate challenges in the world that can impact how we bring ourselves to work every day. And what I mean by that, as an example, particularly as a mom or as a working parent, when we unfortunately face mass shootings at schools, which it's awful to say, but does continue to happen in the States and just happened again this week in Denver. When one took place in Uvalde, Texas last May, myself and another colleague, we actually held one of these circles of care for our working parents, but frankly, anyone in the company to be able to join and just share their thoughts and talk through the feelings that we're having as scared parents that are sending our children off to school every day and worried about their safety, which is just astounding to have to think about in today's world, but it's reality. So that's the type of example where we hold these circles of care as a safe place for people to, again, just come together. Being in a remote first world, you can't do that with your colleagues in person. Doing it virtually, talking through our challenges, making people feel comfortable about how it's impacting them, perhaps impacting what they're able to do and accomplish at work too, because their minds are elsewhere, and just knowing that they feel supported and it's understood and it's really challenging. That's one circle of care that we've held. We also held another circle of care for our employees outside of the United States with the invasion of Russia into Ukraine. And really that impacted a lot of our employees in the European region who had family members in the Ukraine, frankly, family members and employees in Russia that were really struggling with what was happening there. Again, just another opportunity to ensure that people in our company feel safe and their voices are being heard and that they just have colleagues that they can lean on when we're going through challenges around the globe. And unfortunately, it happens every day. So those are the purposes of our circles of care, and they are received quite well. And I think it's something I would encourage a lot of companies to do.
And then golden hours.
Yeah, golden hours. So as a global company, it's tough because we're working with people in all different time zones. So what we found with golden hours is blocking off a specific period of time where essentially the time zones overlap to ensure that no team member is working outside of their normal working hours. And we're never asking any team member to dip into their personal life with it being, like you said, 7 a.m. is often too early for people, or 7 p.m. is also outside of working hours. So those golden hours are the times of day that essentially overlaps and ensures that everybody's working within what we would call normal working hours, and really holding those meetings during those times. But golden hours also ensuring that, I should say something else that we do is minimal meeting Mondays, and then on Fridays, making sure that there aren't recurring meetings either. So minimal meeting Mondays is just a fun acronym, just trying to limit the number of meetings that you have on Mondays, and in particular, not making sure that they're not recurring, so that people coming back from their weekend have the morning to really catch up, set their intentions for the day and the week. And then on Fridays, obviously people are looking to wrap up their week. And yes, we're working hard, but not having as many meetings on those days so people can actually focus, do focus work and focus on what they need to get done and what their intentions are for the following week as well as they head into the weekend.
Yeah, I love that. Because again, it is those recurring meetings that occur on those days. So those are great alternative examples just to how to think through how we schedule meetings and think through the week. And as I say, it's not so that everyone can just have a long weekend. It's so that you can get your work done. And I love you have those 10-hour focus times as well. I think that's so important because for us to do that deep, innovative, creative work, we need to be focused and not interrupted. So that's really important. And then the last one, I know you have also recently rolled out a new maternity leave policy. So tell us a bit about that as well.
Yes. So with maternity leave, so what we've done is, as you mentioned, the United States does not have a great maternity leave policy, particularly as compared to around the globe. But what we implemented is what we call parental leave. And we have now a minimum globally of 16 weeks of maternity leave, and then 10 weeks of parental leave, and an additional 2 weeks of supplemental parental leave as well. So essentially, we've enabled a minimum of 4 months of maternity leave, not only in the United States, but globally. And then any country that offers more, obviously we would meet that standard regulation, but there's a minimum that we've implemented. And then in addition to that, we've supplemented the government income that's paid or the insurance that's paid to provide full salary. And we top that up to ensure that the employees are made whole with whatever their actual salary is. So essentially, they're not losing out on any salary for the time period that they're out on any type of parental leave.
That's great. And so how are your employees responding to all these initiatives? What are the differences that you've seen happen because of them?
Yeah, I think employees feel heard. We took a lot of the feedback that we received through various channels. So we do what we call a GP voice survey, and that's sent out to all of our employees around the globe. And we ask really pointed questions about their experience working at GP. And the point of that is so that we can take action. And one of them was our global benefits. And obviously one of those being parental leave. When we rolled it out, it was one of those proud moments that I've had in the company where the feedback we got was, I'm smiling because it was just amazing. And I love that we took the feedback and we actually acted on it. And it's so impactful to be able to say to a new mom or new dad, especially here in the States, like, you're getting 4 months of leave that's fully paid for. And please go and enjoy your time with your baby. This is precious time. It's also an exhausting time. I've been through it. And Jacqueline, the only thing I would say is I wish we had this back when I had my kids. But wow, I'm so proud of the company for what they're doing for all the employees that are becoming parents now. So yeah, it was received really well.
And this may be a little harder question because everything that you're talking about are things that I've definitely read about. And there's examples of these types of policies. You have your own company branding on them and responsiveness, and they're tailored to your particular employee needs. But these are all fantastic ideas. And yet so many companies aren't doing this. Companies will do surveys and get employee needs, but then they don't act upon them. So what is it that can help companies actually move into caring about the employees first? Even just your triple bottom line policy of employees, customers, and shareholders, that isn't like, it's not rocket science, right? But yet it's not widespread. So do you have any thoughts about that? What is blocking companies from doing that? Because again, we do know all the data on the advantages of diverse, healthy workforces. I was just wondering if you had any thoughts about that, as you as an organization are also trying to lead change across the world in human resources.
Yeah, I think by virtue of what we do as a company, I do believe we are making an impact by sharing what we do as a company with our customers who are hiring globally through us. One of the things we're particularly proud of is how our software helps working moms and parents everywhere because it enables remote work and opportunities for where they live that they otherwise may have never had the opportunity to work for that particular company. If you think about it as an example, a company here in California is seeking to hire an individual and they think they want to hire in Singapore, and say it's just Google, I'm just going to use an example, and Google doesn't have an entity in Singapore and they use an employer of record platform. We're enabling that individual that is in Singapore to work for a company like Google through our EOR platform. Whereas if EOR didn't exist, that individual in Singapore may have never had that opportunity to work for Google because Google might have said, what's not worth it for me to set up a full entity and run an entity in that country just for one employee? So I'll hire someone that's in the States. So I do believe that what we do actually helps, again, everybody around the globe, but particularly even working moms and parents, because one, they're getting the opportunity to work for essentially any company around the globe who's hiring globally through our type of platform, but also ensuring that when we are supporting customers with hiring globally, that we're sharing our best practices and helping them really be a best-in-class employer because we're doing it simultaneously. Like with them, meaning we've rolled out these amazing parental leave and other global benefits options to our own internal employees. And so when customers come to us and say, I'd like to hire this person in Singapore, what are the local typical supplemental benefit packages that are offered? Or what's the salary benchmarking look like for a QA analyst in Singapore, as an example? Or explaining to a customer who's hiring in the UK, pension's no longer something that you really hear about here in the States, but you better understand that when you're hiring in the UK, pension is a requirement, and that's going to be something that you have to offer to your employee. So I do believe that we are helping to shape, yes, with these additional benefits, but also helping our customers to understand what it means to be a best-in-class employer and a remote employer at that as well. And that's through our HR specialists that we have around the globe, educating our customers by their own experience, as well as our account management team. And they learn from what they're seeing GP do. And again, educating our customers to ensure that they're providing a best-in-class employee experience to their employees that they hire through us.
And I love that method of having best-in-class or toolkits to help people put these into place. I think that's what's so important for companies to say, okay, how do we do this? Or is there any organization that kind of gives credit for that? Because again, I know one of the companies and guests that I had spoken with, he had actually been developing an accreditation platform in the UK for gender equity, for example. And so I think that's another way we can see good employees in some ways through organizations like Glassdoor or others. But do you feel like there is any sort of system that's emerging that could really help people want to be part of that best in class or hold them accountable when they're not?
It's interesting you say that. Where my head is at is we have implemented a consortium for the employer of record industry alongside other employer of record companies. And one of the purposes is to, again, implement the best in class practices as an EOR and ensure that we're lobbying with local governments for them to understand what an EOR does, particularly in some jurisdictions where it's not seen as necessarily viable or legal, and it requires a lot of hoops to go through. But what I can see, Jacqueline, is an opportunity to also drive home what you're talking about, which is what does it mean to be a best-in-class remote employer as well. And maybe I'm a little far off, but that's where my head went when you talked about that, because I don't think that there's anything necessarily that I can think of right now that exists.
But I love that you mentioned the lobbying role that employers have, because again, I think when we think about this in the States, is your company is taking on the burden of providing the paid maternity and parental leave. But actually, I feel like companies could have a role in advocating more for these things at the government level, because again, there is some situations where our employees are going to benefit when an employer does that. So I think this moves us into the ESG role of companies to actually take a stand on social issues and advocate for them, because it's their workers who benefit and the companies themselves. Just to end up then, what are any other changes that you want to see either in how you're managing your life as a mom or in your organization or across HR in general? Just something to leave our listeners with what you're looking to achieve next.
Wow, that's a great question. I think it ties back to exactly what you were just saying, Jacqueline, about how what we're doing at GP can really influence how companies go about supporting their employees. And I do believe that we can play a great role in ensuring that not only is GP considered a great employer, but the companies that we support, we can also help them become great employers around the globe through sharing our best practices. And like I said, I think the GEO consortium is definitely a great option as well. So I would say that's something I'm excited about. For myself, I think every working mom can always work on doing a better job of balance. I think a friend of mine just told me recently, Melissa, we always expect perfection out of ourselves, and you don't have to be perfect at either at work or at being a mom, and know that you're doing the best you can. So I think giving ourselves a little bit of grace as moms, as working parents, is always something working on in particular with myself, and knowing that I don't have to be perfect at everything. And it is a constant juggling act and balance, but ultimately I get so much satisfaction and purpose, like you said earlier, out of what I do at work, and certainly as being a working mother as well, and making sure that my kids understand the value in hard work and that I love my job, and I don't want them to see that what I do on a day-to-day basis at work is a negative. So I try to always stay very positive, even when I have to miss certain events that I would love to be at, but unfortunately I can't for them. I want them to know that it's because it's something that I love and I'm doing it ultimately for our family. So I would encourage other moms to think that way as well, if that's beneficial. So yeah, I think again, progress over perfection, I guess, is what I'm most focused on as a mom and as a working mom.
Thanks so much for listening today. I hope the podcast brings you fresh ideas, renewed confidence, and energy to keep leading change. If you need a partner in these efforts, I can help you effectively build a thriving workplace culture for all. I'll help you overcome the real barriers to change you face every day and help you lead real change with evidence-based solutions. In particular, I want to work with passionate leaders who have tried and failed. Because I know you have what it takes, and your experience will help you clearly recognize the difference I can make. For a free consultation today, please visit my website at www.leading-real-change.com. That's www.leadingrealchange.com.
You're a fighter. Push the limits and see it. You're already there. Told you we going higher. Ain't no stopping us. We're going in for the win. And we're gonna celebrate. Then we're gonna do it all over again. And we're gonna rock this place. Cause this is our day. Feel the power, everything that you need.